Good. So today we are going to introduce, well, we've already introduced it, but now we're going to really look at a kind of systematic presentation of the topic of space as a field, a field view of space. And what the significance of that view is what we'll be exploring over the next few weeks. Now, last week we looked at that kind of setting up the foundation of that in terms of the reading we did from TSK, but as we discussed, that language, the language of space as a field, is not used in TSK. But here in the readings, you know, the next several readings, actually, well, we'll be going back and forth between TSK and KTS. But in KTS, the discussion all does focus on the quality or on the understanding of field. I'm playing with my camera, and I'm interested in cameras, so I guess we're okay. Okay. There's a lot packed into the first paragraph of the reading that was assigned, and I want to take some time to go over that. We'll start. I think I'll just go sentence by sentence, and we'll start with the first paragraph, first sentence rather. Within conventional time and space, knowledge becomes available to a knower. Now, what's interesting about that sentence, it's the kind of sentence you're tempted to skip over, but what's being pointed out here is that the very notion that, or a very understanding of knowledge is intimately linked to our conventional understanding of time and space. When we understand time and space in the way we ordinarily do, then the kind of knowledge that's available to us is the knowledge that's available to a knower. No other kind of knowledge. We could maybe try to come up with some alternatives, but mostly, for the most part, no other kind of knowledge is available to us. And you know, that's something important to understand about the TSK vision. Knowledge and time and space are so closely interwoven with one another. When you have a certain kind of space and time, then you have a certain kind of knowledge. Ron comments, that's why we're surprised by paranormal knowing. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one could imagine that if our conventional space allowed for paranormal knowing, there'd be more of it. But that's a different question. That's not really the direction we're going in. We have our way of knowing. And what's characteristic of our way of knowing is that it's knowledge that's available to a knower. And so then the second sentence goes on and describes what the significance of that is, or how that works. The knower is situated in a place, so that's the kind of space dimension, and thus is located in space in a particular way. So that's kind of the key point, I think, that's made here. And when we get into this field way of looking at space, this is exactly what we're going to be concerned with, is we're not going to rely on locatedness. Now the notion of location is absolutely something we take for granted. Of course, everything has a location. And with regard to ourselves, it's very easy to say we have a location. You know, I'm here sitting in this desk in front of the computer so that the camera is recording my image and so on. One of the reasons that makes really good sense to us in terms of a self, in terms of myself, is that we tend to conflate or ignore the distinction between I and me, right? You could definitely say that the me is located here. You know, if somebody else were in the room and asked, where's Jack, and you asked them, where's Jack located, they'd point, you know, they'd say, well, he's right there. And that would be the objective self. So objects are located somewhere. The question about whether a self is located somewhere is really, you could say, more open to question. But we just take it for granted that that's how the self functions, that it's located somewhere. And we will have the opportunity to question that. It's so much taken for granted that, it's hard to get beyond it. It's like when you meet someone casually in a social setting, at least in America, I don't know how it is in other countries necessarily, but everybody always says, well, what do you do? That's kind of the first question. You know, what's your profession, your job, and in the same way, with not that we ask the question because we think we know, we say, where are you located? On the other hand, you know, it's interesting that we have now entered into an era in which that question about where are you located is not immediately obvious. Because, you know, someone calls you on the phone and you say, where are you? You don't know where they are, right? And with cell phones, that's even more true. And certainly with email and other forms of contact, people can be anywhere. So the question of locatedness has become questionable. It has become problematic in a way that it really wasn't in earlier times. And that may help us kind of loosen our link to the sense of being located somewhere. I'm not sure that it does, but at least in theory, we understand that locatedness is flexible and variable. But we're still committed to the idea that we're always located in a particular place, and we are the observer who looks from that position. So location is central. But, you know, we think of location as related to space. Obviously, it's not related in the same way anyway. Time. It is related to knowledge. That's what we're examining right now. We know from a particular location. But we think of it as being related to space, but it doesn't actually have anything to do with space. It has to do with the objects in space. You know, an object is located in a particular place in space. But knowing that doesn't tell us anything at all about space. It leaves space as a kind of a nothing, as a blank. We can use spatial coordinates. You know, we can say this person is located at this particular point, and we have some measurement for it. But we haven't really learned anything. So Ron says GPS. Yeah, that's right. You know, we have our coordinates in space. We're located somewhere. GPS is, what is it, global positioning service or something. The thing that Google Maps uses and other apps like that. It's kind of like, you know, if you imagine on a mirror, you don't have to imagine, just think about a mirror. If you set up a mirror and then if you located the objects that show up in the mirror, you put little tags there, let's say. You say, well, the chair is over in the bottom left corner and the table is up more toward the center and things like that. That would tell you something about the things in terms of their, at least their relationship to each other. It wouldn't tell you anything about the mirror. So if you imagine that, you know, we didn't understand mirrors at all, and in fact, you know, I only have sort of a moderate understanding of how mirrors work, but I kind of get the idea. But if we didn't understand anything at all, being able to locate things on the mirror would not tell us anything about how the mirror worked. And the same thing is true with regard to objects that are located in space. And the knower, the observer, who is also located and is able to know the location of other objects by virtue of being located. So we are left in the dark as far as space is concerned when our focus is location. And as I said, location is not really... You know, just it's not about space. It's about the object located in space. So there's a lot left to explore, you know, a lot of possibility for new knowledge just by beginning to investigate this clearly. So when I was thinking about this, you know, the question came up Usually when we think about the self in TSK, the place that it gets talked about the most, it's not the only place certainly, but it usually gets talked about when we're talking about time. And we think about time as related to the self, I think because there's a narrative. Before I go on with that, let me notice or point out that there are a couple of other comments here. Ron is wondering if located and locked have similar roots. Well, by all means, look it up. I don't know. It's interesting. Locus. Yeah, I don't know. And Philip says, it's all relative, even GPS. It's all distance from things and objects. Location in space is meaningless without reference to something. Right, and that's a good way of making the same point, isn't it? Because location really has nothing to do with space. Location is, here I am in relation to this other object. And space just becomes a kind of an abstract way of discussing locatedness and interrelationship among objects. So location, even though we think of it as a very spatial kind of thing, as I said before, it leaves us in the dark about space. Michael says, locate, vacate, abdicate. They're all about our inhabiting a position. Yeah, that's interesting. Somebody could look up. I would be interested to know, you know, what is the cate, the cate, probably in Latin. Okay. More interesting things about words. Let me just say generally, because this comes up a lot, people like to look at words. I certainly do, and so I think those people who like the way that I present things are also interested in words. And you might wonder, well, do words really give us knowledge, or is it just kind of an accident? You know, I mean, after all, in English, some word may be interesting, but it may not be at all related to the way that word works in German or Portuguese or whatever. But my clear, strong sense is that language really does make a big difference because it gives us the categories. It gives us the possibilities we have for interpretation. So they will be a little different for different people in different languages. Okay, so I was starting to say that ordinarily when we think of the self, we connect it to time, and that's because the self always has a narrative. You know, our persona, our self in that sense, is always about an ongoing story. You know, I was this person, or I was doing this thing, and I will continue to be this person over time, and then I have these plans for things that I'm going to do. The self is a very temporal kind of structure. One way you could talk about that, and I think this came up a few sessions ago, you could say that identity, just the very sense of identity, is a temporal thing because, you know, the ent in identity, so we're going to play with words a little more, has to do with being, and then the id ent, the identity, is the same being. Identity means sameness. So built into the idea of identity is something that continues over time. So that's how we think about the self. Let me back up just to point out that Ron has shared the etymology of locate, to establish oneself in a place or settle, to place, put, set, dispose, from locus, a place, to mark the limits of a place. So next question is lock. Are you looking that up, Ron? We'll see where that gets us. Okay, so self has to do with narrative and time, mostly. Here we're not talking about a self, and you know, you'll notice that the term doesn't show up at all here. What shows up? He says there's the knower, and the knower becomes an observer, right? The knower is in a particular place, is located, and that observer plays the role of a bystander, which means that the bystander is the one who's standing to one side, for those of you who are tuning in from Germany, there's actually only a couple of you, you probably know that I'm not going to talk about the way bystander was translated in TSK because nobody was very happy with that. But in Dynamics of Time and Space, it's translated with the term Zaungast, and very different has nothing to do with our word bystander, but it's meant to convey some of the same sense. You're at a distance, you're removed, you're not involved. So the particular location that we have is a bystander location, which means we're just looking at things from a distance. In English, the word bystander typically in usage is connected to the phrase innocent bystander. Being an innocent bystander means you're not involved, you're disengaged, you have nothing to do with what you see. And that's the way that we engage our world. So being a bystander has a tremendous impact on how we encounter the world. We lose the possibility, to use just a one-word description right now, we really lose the possibility of intimacy with what it is, with the world, because we're separate, we're distant, we're a bystander. And that all has to do with having a location. It's a particular location because it's the observer location. But that's, in a sense, you could say that comes up because if you talk about the location of my phone and my desk, presumably they can't be intimate with each other because they're not aware of each other. So we have a way of being aware of the world, of the other things that have locations, objects, but we're aware of them in such a way that they're always at a distance. We're aware of them in a bystander way. So that's what's basically going on. And I just want to make one more observation about this distinction between the self in time and the bystander in space. And that is that we've already had an example of, or we've already discussed briefly a little while ago, a few weeks ago, the knowledge equivalent, it seems to me, or one knowledge equivalent, which is the witness, right? The witness is the one that guarantees the reality. That was the way in which we talked about it and the way it's presented in Dynamics, I think it is. Or was it Love of Knowledge? I'm not sure right now. So you have the self in time, the bystander in space, and the witness in knowledge. That seems to me to be a very interesting way of thinking about the interrelationship among these various factors. Now, the self goes ahead and claims the role of the witness and claims the role of the bystander or the observer. So the self is kind of the dominant one in that triad. But the distinction is still worthwhile considering, it seems to me. So there's another point made here. We're on the second paragraph, I guess. And it's an interesting point in terms of a term that comes up quite a bit in TSK, and especially in the first TSK book, and that is focal setting. When I was reading this today, I realized something I hadn't before. In this paragraph, four lines down, Rinpoche writes, the qualities that the bystander has, its character, its identity, and so on, those all contribute to locatedness. I think that's clear from what we've been saying. And then it says, determining the focal setting for observation. Now, focal setting is a term that's used especially in the first TSK book, but it comes up, I think, probably in all of the books. And when I read this, I realized that I'd been making an assumption which isn't quite right. My notion of focal setting. So a focal setting has to do with cameras, and maybe in a while people won't understand it very well because cameras nowadays are pretty much point and shoot, most cameras, unless you're really serious about photography. But a focal setting has to do with the way you focus the camera, and then certain things come in focus and out of focus, so your reality shifts depending on the focal setting. That's the image that's being used when Rinpoche writes about focal setting. But my assumption was that, you know, we were the ones who were focusing the camera and getting different realities because of the focal setting. But what's pointed out here, it seems to me, is that we are the camera. It's our focal setting. It's our particular locatedness that that determines what's available to us. Some objects are available depending on how we understand ourselves to be located, but if we understand ourselves to be located differently, then other objects come up. That may help give you a sense, at least for me it was interesting to think about focal setting. Okay, so space is not really about location, but we assume it is because we are located. And because we are located, we see only things that are also located, which means we see objects. And that means that we operate in terms of here and there and from and to and so on. What happens is that everything kind of falls into place. At the bottom of 178, Rinpoche talks about this, and he's already introduced the idea of a field, which we're coming to in a moment. But he says everything kind of matches this idea of being in a particular space, being located in that space. He says objects with specific qualities arise and pass away. They move and interact. Logic and interpretation match their movement. They make sense of it in accord with human needs and desires. They set up a characteristic kind of knowledge. There's a parallel unfolding of mental operations and the laws of nature. Everything is kind of connected. All of it based on this idea that we have a location in space. So this is actually an example of a field. And that's really what we want to start looking at. So in the particular field that we inhabit, everything has a location. One of the things that's very interesting there is that statement that I just read you. Let's see if I can find it again. About four lines from the bottom of page 178, he says, maybe that's not the best place, but he says, we make sense of what appears to us in accord with human needs and desires. Let's see if I can find another place to find that. I think I will have to settle for that right now. It's interesting and important. The notion is that what shows up, you know, what's located, depends on the way we understand ourselves to be located. And how we understand ourselves to be located varies. Really, it varies from moment to moment on the basis of our concerns and our interests. And I'm going to give you a link in the orientation for next week. I'm going to include a link to a video or maybe a couple of videos from YouTube that you can go and look at that have to do with a phenomenon that people are interested in nowadays that's called change blindness. And the basic idea is that if you're focused on one aspect of what shows up, if you're dealing with what's located, the objects that are located, in terms of your interests and concerns, other aspects that in a kind of, quote, objective sense are available to you, you don't see at all. You completely miss them. And it's very interesting to realize how pervasive that is. So I'll give you a couple of links to that. But we have that basic sense. In our way of understanding, everything is located. What we see is the objects that are located in a particular way. We're located as bystanders, and the locatedness shifts depending on our interests. Now, as I said, this is an example of a field, and this is what Rinpoche introduces here on page 178 in the second full paragraph. He's saying that when we have a particular way of engaging space, and it's this located way that we're focusing on here, where we really can't understand space, we can only understand location and locatedness. That is a limit on our knowledge, and that's where we started today, talking about how fundamentally that limits our knowledge. So he says we can challenge these limits by considering the world of conventional space within which the bystander observes outsiders, So the outsiders are the objects that are located. And in the first TSK book, as I said in the orientation, the term used is not outsider, but outside stander. Same thing. So conventional space within which the bystander observes outsiders as the shifting exhibition of a field. The various aspects of locatedness, including the attitudes of the observer, the positions taken by a self, the ways that objects take form, and space as the domain for locatedness, so kind of location space in this limited sense of space, are all given together by the field. So this sense of given together, the field gives what appears. And that gives us a way of working with space that we really want to be looking at. And the fundamental point about a field that sets it apart from this idea of location or location space, let's say, the fundamental significance of looking from a field perspective or understanding space in terms of field is the interconnection of everything in the field. And we've already talked about that a little bit. And to go back again to the top of 179, he says, each member of the field supports and subtly mirrors all the others. So whatever shows up, if you're looking in terms of field, you're saying our experience essentially consists of being located. Well, let's see, we don't want to use the word located, I guess. There is this field, and we are in the field. And everything else that concerns us at the moment is in the field. Now, a lot of things are going on that if you looked objectively, if you took a photo and then tried to identify things, a lot of those things are not in the field because we're not concerned with them. No. My right foot, this is an example that's used in contemporary philosophy. You know, my right foot is not of concern to me, so it's not really in my field. Now that I've mentioned it, it concerns me. And now it's in my field. So that's an example of how the field is always shifting. You know, he says here, the shifting exhibition of a field. So a field is very fluid. And that's one of the things that I think is very helpful about the image or the notion of a field is how fluid it is. When we're talking about objects that are located, objects have identity. Identity commits you to sameness, and you're in a very stuck place. But a field is always shifting, always fluid. So Michael has a comment and or question. If we are the camera and our focal setting comes from the field, perhaps our interpretations of phenomena and the building up of a picture we call the real world also comes from the field. I would stop there and say, yes, that really is exactly what Rinpoche is saying. The interpretations we give, the logic we apply, all of our mental operations, all of that is a part of the field. So we build up a picture, and that is a picture that makes sense within the field, or is a picture, you could say, maybe a picture of the field. Okay. Then the possibility of change and freedom must require us to see the operation of a field in our lives. We'll come to that. That's right. I think that's right. Then what? Does seeing the operation of a field create a relationship along with a mutual communication between the field and our individual presence within it? Yeah, the then what is exactly what we're going to be exploring. You know, if we begin to look at our experience in terms of fields rather than located objects, there is an aliveness. Ron comments, I like the dynamic sense of a field. There is nothing fixed. And that's exactly right. It's things open up. And the possibility of a change, or seeing the operation of a field, which is what Michael is asking about here, does establish the possibility of a communication. The point really, in a sense, is this. If we don't have a field perspective, then whatever field we're in will shape our possibilities. And whenever something new presents itself, it will pretty much, I mean, the field shifts. We have different ways of engaging the world. but there are going to be certain fundamental things, and especially this notion of locatedness that we've been focusing on, those are going to persist over time. And so there's always only going to be certain kinds of knowledge that are available to us. If we understand that as a field exhibition, which is a term that Rinpoche uses here, the shifting exhibitions of a field, there are new possibilities. So I like the word, one of the reasons I like the word exhibition is one aspect of it is that it's like an exhibition in a museum, you know, and you can always set up a new exhibit. So there's a possibility, yes, there is a possibility of freedom. And Ron says, so knowing is a function of the field quality. Yeah, exactly. And that's the point that Michael was making also, right? The way that we know, the picture that we build up through the kind of knowledge available to us is an expression of, or a, expression or manifestation of the field. And the limits on that knowing are exactly the limits that a particular field puts in place. Okay, so the knowledge that we have, the mental operations that are available to us, the logic that we can apply, as he points out here at the bottom of 178, the laws of nature that we consider to operate, all of that is related to the field. And Ron says the output of the focal setting. Yeah, focal setting, I think it's clear in this presentation that you know, when we're talking about focal setting, talking about field is another way of talking about focal setting. I think it opens up a really interesting new dimension, and that's what we're looking at. So when we don't realize that the field is in operation, then our knowledge is limited. And that's exactly what it says at the beginning of page 180 in the next chapter. When the field that allows first level appearance and experience to appear is not disclosed as a field, this non-disclosure takes the form of characteristic limits on knowledge. And he explores some of those characteristic limits, the barriers between mental and physical, and space and matter. What happens is, if we don't understand the field, maybe this will help clarify the significance of this, if we don't understand in terms of a field, then we always focus on the content, on what shows up in the field. So in our ordinary understanding, that's objects located in space, including the bystander, who is the self, whom the self claims ownership of. That's the content that shows up. If it were some other kind of content, well, then we would see that other kind of content. But we would never see what he calls here the field dynamics and mechanics here in this first paragraph on 180. And that opens up a whole new field of knowledge. So Michael asks, is the field wider than any particular focal setting, more the setting of a setting than the result? Yes, although that's a fairly complicated question. But you know, you could say there's always a field in operation. So there's always a particular focal point. So in any moment where you could say we're limited to a particular field. But the field nature, the field dynamics and mechanics, have to do with, as you say, the act of setting, you know, of setting the focal setting. If we're aware of how the field arises, then the mechanics of how it operates, the field dynamics and mechanics, we're not limited by the field. So other fields are much more readily available. We don't just automatically fall back into the same field. That's one aspect of it. And we're ready to challenge the whole field structure, because, you know, this is not the final word in TSK, but it's, you know, talking about space as a field. But it's a very important move, I think, because this gives us a kind of a pathway, you could say, to opening up our commitment to location and identity and positions. So Ron writes, active ignoring of the field keeps identity intact. a lapse of knowing is synonymous with mind self. Well, I'm not going to comment on that last sentence because I'm not sure exactly what you're saying, but yeah, the ignoring of the field, as you know, when the field is not disclosed, he says here at the top of 180, there are characteristic limits on knowledge. And one of the very interesting kinds of inquiry you can do in TSK is to explore those limits on knowledge. But what happens is we shift fields all the time. A good example is mood, and we'll have a chance to look at that more. You know, if we're feeling happy, then we occupy a particular field. If later on we feel sad, then we occupy a different field. And even though kind of objectively you might say, maybe we're sitting in our chair and for 5 minutes we feel happy, for 5 minutes we feel sad, we say, okay, the things around us are the same, but the world, the field of space has shifted in a fundamental way. So that's something that's really important to explore. And one of the things it suggests is that it's not quite accurate to say that a mood, like being happy or sad, is just our subjective response to a situation. No, the reality that we engage is objective, includes the objective elements, but it also includes the subjective elements. It's not so helpful to think in those terms. So in this chapter, Rinpoche introduces a different terminology, and that is the terminology of gravity, which is essentially that a field exerts this gravitational pull. It attracts some things, and in a way, maybe it'd be nice to use the word magnetic rather than gravity, because it attracts some things but will not allow in others, repels others. That's how a magnet. But let's stay with the notion of gravity. There's certain things are kind of pulled into the field and other things are not, based on the particular gravity in operation. So that's one way of talking about how a field takes on its own particular character. Michael says a field is more like the weather. He's asking, is the field more like the weather than the blue sky above the clouds? I'd have to think about that. I don't really want to give you an answer, but there's a certain appeal to that because the field is always shifting. And in that sense, yes, it's an interesting image and it's definitely worth looking at. I'm going to mention at this point that for those of you who are in the teacher training or who are handing in assignments, I'm going to give you an assignment which I will describe in the orientation, which involves looking at exercise 3 in dynamics of time and space and actually doing that exercise. And of course, anybody's welcome to look at it. In that exercise, Rinpoche talks quite a bit about gravity. So it's a very nice parallel or complement to the discussion in this short chapter from KTS. Okay. Now, I do want to get to a little practice, and we're just about there. One of the things that Rinpoche says here is because the field is innately indeterminate, inherently indeterminate, it allows for non-standard happenings, right? So he talks at the beginning of page 184 about field transformations giving rise to non-standard happenings. Because the field is innately indeterminate. It can, I guess that's all I want to say about it, really. One particular field has its gravity, right, and determines what can be available within that field. But when you begin to engage field dynamics and mechanics, then new possibilities open up. So, I'd like us to practice with that. It's a little bit late, but let's practice for a couple of minutes and then we'll run on as we often do for a few minutes. Basically, the practice is this. If you just let what comes up in your experience, let yourself be aware of the field within which it comes up. Try to do that. And then whatever comes up, having kind of accepted this notion that it's within a field, let it be present as a field presentation rather than as a particular thing. Right? In this first paragraph, he makes this point. This is what I'm taking it from. He says, when you look at the field is not fixed or rigid, cognized by a knowledge that understands appearance as field presentations. It might appear as newly expansive and embracing. So that's the practice, is to tune into this sense of everything appearing within a field, and then let whatever appears be a field presentation, which is different from letting it have or expecting or assuming that it has an identity. Presumably more open, more flexible, more fluid. So let's try that for a couple of minutes, okay? Okay, so I'll give you an opportunity to comment. Ron says that this sounds like exercise 16 in TSK. I think that's space-time knowledge on the ordinary level. Is that right? If I'm wrong, take Ron's word for it, not mine. But you might want to look at that exercise and see if it relates. So we're really basing ourselves just on this one sentence, really. That whatever appears in the field, when it's cognized by a knowledge that understands appearance as field presentations, whatever is cognized might appear as newly expansive and embracing. So I'm waiting for comments. Yes, sure. I think it is. Certainly Rinpoche writes in different places, I think especially in Dynamics, about the way in which our take on the world, which is kind of the field that we inhabit, is shaped by our culture. And I think it's absolutely true, you know, that just think of it in terms of global politics, which is perhaps not the most edifying thing to think of. But, you know, you can just say, well, the field in which Vladimir Putin operates when he looks at Ukraine, you know, is very different from the field that we inhabit. And I think that if you understood it in terms of the shifting exhibitions of a field, that might actually be helpful. Let's take a look at a couple of comments, because there's several, and then we should stop. I'm going to write something in the orientation about the next exercise, which is the expanding and condensing, an exercise that you find in When It Rains. I think I'd like to kind of rethink that in terms of the field. So I'll try to describe what I have in mind for that. Okay, so we have several people commenting. David says, awareness of transparency of all the fixed boundaries of the room within which I sit, aware of what is beyond. Sound carries the relationship. Feeling threads the touch. Seeing seeds the flowing movement. Well, that's very nice, very lovely. And it makes good sense to me. It's related to something I was noticing as we did the practice. And it's not so easy, at least for me, to focus on a particular object and see that as a field presentation. Maybe it's just we're too committed the moment we identify the object to identity and locatedness. So it seems to help to go out and to go to boundaries and expansiveness. I think that's right. Remco asks, is everything that comes up a field presentation, or with everything that comes up changes the field, so it is more a new field presenting itself, a right foot field compared to the previous field? Well, I think that the second thing you say is right. I don't think it contradicts the first. Whatever comes up is a field presentation, but the field is not static. It's like, oh, here comes something new into the field. But it's still the same field, but now something has been added. In every moment, the field is shifting. It's in flux at all times. There's nothing stable. There's just this dynamic. And I want to give you an image that I think is helpful from a Western philosopher and psychologist, William James. He said that in our ordinary knowing, he's talking about science, really, but also I think our ordinary knowing. He says, if you think about a bird that is flying from one branch to another, he said, we always focus on what happens when the bird lands on the branch. That's what we look at. But we never let ourselves look at what's happening when the bird is flying from one branch to another. And that aspect of flying, that dynamic, it's not quite the same as the field, but I think it's helpful to point to this sense of everything is shifting. Everything is moving. So, and the field, you know, there is nothing fixed or stable about the field. Eliana says, the senses, moods, and mind influence the shifting of the field. Yes, you need to really take seriously what Rinpoche says. I think it was back on, I'm not sure now, 179 or something. He says, everything subtly mirrors everything else in the field. You know, you change one element, you know, you drop a penny in the pool and the flow of water changes, or, you know, I guess that famous thing about fractals that, you know, the flapping of a butterfly's wings means a storm over the Gulf of Mexico, or, you know, everything shifts. Ron says, our own presence appearing as a body is a part of the field presentation. Yes, absolutely. And our own presence of self also, which may or may not be connected to embodiment in any particular moment, in any field, are definitely part of a field presentation. So this possibility of field presentation is very, very fundamental. Ken says, the field resists thingness of itself as thing. Is there an itness? Right, right. We certainly don't want to talk about fieldness, because that would turn it into an itness, right? But field undermines identity, undermines it. in we read a while back in this program a line from Rinpoche where he says, you have to pound on the is of each ism. Well, this is kind of like that. Field lets you pound on the claim of something to be what it is. Ron asks, off topic. Oh, yeah, I think this is the last thing. No, there's more. Ron asks, is there a TSK retreat this summer? Yes, please look on the website. I'm sure it says something, and it's in June. I don't have the exact dates. And Sudhi says, and she's quoting something, a human being is part of the whole, called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. I just scrolled too far. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion, to embrace all living things and the whole of nature and its beauty, and that is Einstein. So it's a very lovely quote, very much related to Field, and suggests something really important. You know, Field, TSK does not talk very much about love and compassion. It does occasionally, here and there, little bits. But the very thrust of TSK, so in this example, being able to see things as Field presentations, naturally moves you away from the position of the bystander, the observer. It puts you in the world with everybody and opens into, it seems to me, naturally, the kind of compassion. And Philip, going back to the specifics of the exercise, which is good, probably a good way to end, he says, some things in my room that I never pay attention to came right up front, and I have the feeling they're invading the field or strongly modifying it. Okay. Well, invading is a kind of negative word. I don't know if that's, if you meant to have that negative sense there. But yeah, when something new enters our field, and it might be something that's been there all the time, the field shifts, and it can shift in dramatic ways. So that's something to look at. I'm going to give you a walkabout practice, but I'll put it in the orientation. But this field presentation during the week, I think that's a great practice. We have the exercise expanding and condensing, and I want to say something. I will say something about that also in the orientation, doing it more in terms of field. So that's it for today. I'm sorry I kept you a little late, but there was a lot to go over. This seems to me to be a very important chapter and point, kind of turning point in the program, because we really now are introducing this new vision. I've said so much about the vision, and here's a kind of a specific manifestation of a new way of seeing in terms of, let's just say, to shorten it, in terms of field presentation. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.